This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So you guys made it. That's fantastic. Were there more? Were there these seats for?
I think there were supposed to be a lot more people coming. Yeah. And the weather kept people.
I know, it's amazing. God, it's still coming down.
So did the project? Did you go after the project, or did the project come after you?
Thank you. I heard about the project, and yeah, but I went out after. It was actually just after the Globes and then the Oscars, and so I felt like maybe I can. I had a little bit of a chance here, talking to my friend Ben Affleck, I said, your friend Matt Damon's making a movie. So, but I had already been in the running for it, apparently. So, but yeah, this is one to go to chase after.
We've heard a lot of improv is on these movies. How did Paul tell you about the pro? How did you know about the character before you started shooting, and how did it change as you went?
Well, we had a script. You know, we had a real beginning to end script, which is beautifully made and structured. And the way Paul works is he takes that and uses that as the roadmap and the boundaries. And most of the scenes are in the script. A lot of it changed, that we got rid of things that maybe didn't feel like the truth at the time to where we were going. You know, so where the improv comes into play is we'll meet in the morning, read over the scene we have, and just kind of cherry pick from that, and then get it in our own words, go away, and we pretty much rewrite it, you know, either sometimes a whole page or just a minor detail, and then it was kind of locked down. But it was, Paul works mostly in collaboration, but it's about searching for the truth. It's not about just experimenting or, you know, being greedy with the time, you know.
Was your character based on someone real, and did you spend any time talking to any reporters who are in the field out there, or anyone kind of get into that?
No, my character is pretty much, you know, she's a fictional character, but she certainly represents the press at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, it could have been from a reporter from a UK paper, it could have been, you know, New York Times, it could have been, you know, any number of outlets, but she pretty much represents the people who wanted to believe this to be true. Mm-hmm. And in the case, what Paul and I, we decided what would be more interesting is finding a character who'd spent their whole career writing about WND, and here comes your big moment, you know? And if mm-hmm. you could cash in, be it for your career or your ego, whichever was driving Lori Dane, that would be more interesting. And then towards the end of the film, again, she also represents the hope of the press, of the people who did go that extra mile to double-check, triple-check a source, to get the real story out, to really search for the truth.
But it must be tough, though, because obviously you have these press conferences, and they're telling you this is the truth, and you kind of got to report on what you're supposed to do, and say, oh, I don't believe it, and, you know, when you're being told that and stuff. But did you ever have any kind of interaction with any of the reporters who were there?
A friend of mine put me in touch with Ann Garrels, which was a friend of his, and she very generously kind of talked me through just what her experience was as a reporter, as a woman, and even minor detail, what would be packed in her bag as she went out for the day, what her notebook would look like. When I first got her on the phone, I thought, okay, she's going to tell me a lot about the politics, but straight away she's like, okay, don't let them put you in army fatigues. You know, and I thought, you know, we're girls, we're talking about clothes already. You know, but the details, you know, the same. You know, you meet people from the South, and they get upset when they see a Southerner depicted on the screen, and it's a terrible accent. You know, for her, she's like, don't, you know, the detail was important to her as well, and I really admired that for her.
What would be in her bag? What does a journalist bring in?
Well, let's see, what was in, we had pens and paper, and
a bottle of water.
There was the track phone they had. Is that what it's called now? My memory is fading me after a year and a half. And certainly her camera and food and water.
So there's all this action going on around you, and your character's kind of a bit more mellow. Were you ever like, I just really want to jump out of that helicopter.
Well, there were versions. There was a version where I died, and there was a version where I lost my leg.
Oh my God.
And then one day, news came in that I live, and I was kind of disappointed. I wanted to get in on that action. Yeah, that was fun. So instead, I just walked with good strong purpose. Yeah.
Well, what's your reaction? What was your reaction when you saw the final product? Were there a few scenes that you?
I gotta say, it was crazy. Because we shot. I believe you guys may already know this, in London and Morocco and Spain, all doubling as Iraq. But some days we just had us, a Jeep, and a big blue tarp over the doorway. And then when I saw the film the first time, there was Baghdad burning in the background, and there's even a palm tree that wasn't there, and there are some people that weren't there, and that is truly just cinema magic, and that's a good reason to go to the movies. I heard Jason say before, and I agree with him, it's bigger than us, the story, and it deserves to be seen on that big screen.
What was your experience like on location? People were talking a little before about, some of the different venues you were at, and I don't know, how did those particular environments, strike you, and, did you get a chance to kind of, explore it all on your own?
Yeah, Morocco is an incredible place. If you haven't been, you don't know that yourself, but as a New Yorker too, I remember going, we all went to dinner the first night, and you get dropped off in a car at the edge of the Medina, and they say it's that way, the restaurant, and you're walking down these dark, windy alleyways, and you think, especially as a woman, this can't be good, this is going to end really badly, even though there's more men in our group than women, they'll protect us, but no. And then we go down another windy alley, and then there's a knock on a door, which you think you're leading to your death, and what opens up is the most incredible aroma and colors and music just pouring out, and this atmosphere is just, it's intoxicating, and it's like none other, but I loved Morocco. It's a real challenge to all five senses. Mm-hmm. You think you know something and you don't. It's wonderful. It keeps you on your toes that way.
They shot this project, this film, for many, many months. What was your level of commitment on this thing? And did you leave the set, come back, leave, come back?
Yeah, so we started, I think it was in November, and coincidentally and luckily on the schedule, I had a month off, so I was able to go to the Oscars. So I went from Spain to L.A., and then after that I went back and joined them in Morocco, and then we went to London, and then we went away for about 6 months, I think it was, because Matt went to film Invictus and The Informant, and then we came back. So we always knew we had reshoots, because we also filmed this during the writer's strike was on, so we had some obstacles in that way. So we knew we'd have to come back once it was settled and capture a couple of things here and there that we missed. So all told, I think it was a year and a half of a commitment. But worth it, yeah.
So what's your experience been like post-Oscars? Because, you've been a working actor for a long time, and you got that role which kind of broke out, and all of a sudden everyone knew who you were, you went to the Oscars, then you have to go back to being an actor and doing...
Yeah.
Is it harder to go back to what you just doing the grinder? Is it easier these days now just because of that, or...?
No, it's great to go through that, which is such a gift and such a fun party. But for me, I knew... Get on the next plane, go right back home to New York, because that is, you can't maintain that level of, party and or expectation, that everyone will welcome you with open arms. You still have to go back and do the work, right. If you want to be invited back again. So, but I went and I did The Office after Gone Baby Gone. I wanted to really shift it up and find something fun and, funny, rather. I wanted to try my hand at comedy and a skirt and having my hair brushed. and then, of course, The Green Zone was a big thing. And then I had a child. Jack Goes Boating was the next film that I worked on with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And We just premiered that at Sundance, and now I start Tom McCarthy's next film called Win-Win. We're going to start filming that next month.
What's that about?
It's a story of a middle-class couple in Jersey who are under financial pressures, like pretty much the rest of the country right now, and how this young 15-year-old boy comes unexpectedly into their lives and how that changes their world.
That sounds very Tom McCarthy.
Yeah.
You're one of the couple, half the couple.
Yeah, myself and Paul Giamatti.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
To go back to The Office, obviously you're great at comedy. Do you think you're
going to
come back to the series?
I was at Carrie the other night. I was like, I feel this responsibility. So many people want this responsibility. Michael and Holly to get back together, you know. It's like, it's almost like Sam and Diane. Or, you know. But I don't have plans to, but it's always something that I'd stay open to because it was so much fun. I had such a blast on that show.
What
if the script was right, you know, for now I like... you know, I live in New York with my family here, so if the situation were right, and again, if it was well written.
Well, speaking of well written TV, I'd like to address The Wire.
That was St. David Simon you were talking about next.
It's going to be when you look back on your work on that show and the show in general, what do you?
I'm so proud. I was being taught at Harvard. I mean, that show is being taught at Harvard and Tulane and so many other universities across the country. And I just think it's phenomenal. I think it's, and that it is standing the test of time, is, and to be a part of that is, you know, as an actor, when I started out, I was like, it was just one thing, like, I just want to have a job. And then it turns out, I just want to have a good job. I want it to be a good role. And now if you have all those things, and then it turns into something that matters, at the end of the day, matters and affects people's lives, that's an incredible feeling.
Have you pitched him on why you should be on his new show?
He actually asked me to be, but I was pregnant at the time, so I couldn't join them. But his new show is phenomenal. I read that script, and I don't know how much you know about Tremé. It's about post-Katrina New Orleans, and I imagine that's what he's going to, you know, I'm sure he's going to take the same approach, you know, for The Wire. Those are his work ethics. That's the way he writes. Story really matters first. So, but I can't wait to see that one. And Wendell Pierce and Clark Peters are in that as well. So,
you said that you like your work to be kind of, that to actually mean something. Do you think that Green Zone, do you feel like Green Zone has the potential to do that?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Green Zone, there's the element of just pure entertainment. You can go on this wild roller coaster ride of this action thriller, you know. But I believe at the end of the day, it's either going to, people will say, well, yeah, what do I believe? What did I believe? What matters? You know, how is it true? Is that how we got into this in the first place? Because so many people didn't want to believe it, and as we all know. But I do think it'll matter. I guess it's about timing as well, when people want to face it or not.
Did you have the opportunity? I know your character didn't have a lot of interaction with a lot of the soldiers, but did you get to meet any of the soldiers?
Yes.
And what was that, you know, experience?
Yeah, that was humbling because, you know, there's an element of any job you're on, you know, it's a lot of camaraderie, sharing stories, and your new best friends. And I remember one day, you know, here's our nice catered lunch, and here we are in sunny Morocco, and we all got our fake sweat and dirt on, and I just looked over, and it struck me for a moment. I said, oh, you know, I go home to New York after this. And some of them are going back for their third and fourth tours, you know, and it stopped me. It really stopped me in my tracks, you know. And I remember the day that we filmed the scene where where I meet Matt's character in the Green Zone by the swimming pool. And when the soldiers, when they came on to set and saw the pool, and it was pretty much pared down for what you see in the movie because a lot of CGI was added, but they said, this was there, you know? And they're seeing the props of the Pringles and the Pizza Hut and this. And one of them's like, I would have been fucking pissed. No way, you know? And the same, I just heard Matt tell a story that one of them said, like, So you're telling me I've been shitting in a hole for a week and these guys are eating Pizza Hut? You know, it's, they were shocked. They were shocked. But they were an incredible group of guys.
Since you've worked with Ben and Matt now, can you compare and contrast, like, working with them?
And Casey, don't forget Casey now. He'd be pissed off. Yeah. No. It's interesting because I worked with Ben as a director, obviously, and Matt as an actor, so there's no way to really compare, like, what it's like to be in a scene, you know? And I would love to know what that's like. I'd love to work with Ben as an actor. I think that would be a great giggle. but you know what they do have in common is they're both ferociously intelligent guys and really down to earth and really generous with what they know. You know, there's nothing worse when someone's smarter than you and they pause or they scoff when you ask a question like, you don't know that? Or, you know, these guys, they don't miss a beat. They bring you in to the world. There's something. Who else is from Boston? Who can I work with next? I want to keep that going. Mark Wahlberg. Is he a good guy? I want to work with him next. Yeah.
We have the accent already, so you can do any.
You mentioned this is a story bigger than all of us. When you walk away from the set, did you feel a bit more savvy about political issues that's happening? Did it change real?
I think that's true on any movie. Tom McCarthy and I were just joking about this on his, you know, one of the great perks of being an actor is you're only as smart as the job you're in, you know, and you're only as informed as the job you're in, and you do become an expert, and you read all the books, but then there's a part of, like, you move on. So in Tom's movie now, it's a big theme of wrestling, you know, high school wrestling, and so we're all becoming like, oh, really, how many pins did he have? Like, I never watched wrestling in my life, but in the next 2 months, I'm going to be an expert on that, you know. Although I couldn't say I'm an expert on Iraq.
So something comes coming out of the New York theater scene. You work, you know, working with Philip, and you're working, you know, and how gratifying is it to see all the people you work with, like Michael Shannon, all the, like, all kind of, like,
yes,
and, like, start like being recognized and being, you know, because I think a lot of filmmakers, they see this work and go, okay, we got to get Michael Shannon to do this because,
yeah, he's, you know, phenomenal.
Yeah, and all from the same background in the area. I mean, how gratifying is that to see that?
It does feel really good, especially the actors who stay and live in New York. It feels like solidifying the home team, you know, you know, and there's safety in numbers in that way. But it is, yeah, because you spend your time growing up with everybody and not making money, but, you know, doing it for, you know, what we think are the right reasons and just trying to be a better actor. And So to see success like Michael's had in the past year, it's right. It feels right. It doesn't feel like it's a fluke.
Right, it's deserved. I mean, you guys put in the work, and yeah.
It feels.
Sorry,
what he said.
You were at this year's Sundance for your film. What was that experience like for you, you know, now that you're a month away or removed from it?
To see that film, I love that film so much. And to see it with that audience and the audience take to it as much, you know, and really go with it and go with those characters as much as they did, it was very joyous. And it surprised us. I remember that when we came out for that first Q&A, and rather the second day, the whole audience, they stood up. And we all stopped. And I thought, you know, Phil's seen, you know, Phil's must have seen, you know, had a lot of standing ovations in his career. And he too, it took his breath away. And we thought, oh, good, they've come with us on this story, this little odd, quirky story. And they were with us. It was intensely gratifying.
Did you have a chance to see other films at the festival? Or was it all promotion and my film?
It was mostly promotion. We were in and out for like 2-3 days. But I did go see Company Men. I went to go support Ben, and we missed each other. We were texting. He's backstage, and you know the Sundance, the staff, the local staff that they, I guess they're volunteer. They don't mess around. I couldn't get backstage. I was like, I'm here to see Ben. He's like, no, he left. He left. He went out the back door. It's like Elvis left the building or something. I was like, oh my god. So I texted. I was like, I can't get to you. So, but yeah, that's the only other film I saw.
I guess the other question is, he is known, Paul is known for doing a lot of takes, and I'm curious, what was the most takes you had to do on any of your scenes, or were there any shots that you know, he was able to do in one take, he's like, yeah, we got it, let's move on?
I don't remember any one takes, like Clint Eastwood. Like, we got the rehearsal, move on. But, you know, it never occurred to me that Paul did a lot of takes, any more than, you know, other directors. It felt like the norm. And then, we always had two cameras going at once, and because it's all handheld, it just felt like just another dance, as more than another take. It just felt like we could just keep picking it up and finding it in bits and pieces. But so it didn't feel laborious in any way.
When you're working with two cameras and you're working with cameras that are constantly on the move, the way he films, does he tell you? Obviously, you're not supposed to look at the camera. You're not supposed to break the fourth wall. But does he almost say, "Don't worry about it"? If you happen to do that. I mean, I'm just curious how that dance works.
I think if that were to happen, you just quickly edit out, or the other camera would be on Matt at that time or something, so it's not too much. But the dance works where, if you're both two actors walking down the hall and the camera's behind us, but there's one's going to meet us, you know, then that camera knows to duck out of sight at that point. But also, it does, you know, in a scene when you're with the other actor, okay, this is us going into the unknown. But when the cameramen are also on guard with you, you know, are on point, it's it really feels like a company. And you might just feel like a slight hand on your back as you're like, they're just moving you. And it's not disruptive. It's like, okay, great, we are all here together, you know. And, you know, or you might do that for the, you know, one of the camera crews, like moving their mic cord out if your hand was out of shot, and just to all save it, because it is, they are big, long shots that start up a staircase and down, and someone's getting into a car, you know, there is a lot, you know. After five takes, you're climbing those stairs again. You're like, gosh, shit. it's a well-oiled machine, really. And also, sorry, it's the same cameraman from the Bourne movies, so they're all really well in tune with each other.
Are you looking for any more experiences like this when I have to do the Thomas movie, or are you trying to find like the quieter movies and try to do more, which is like that, just quieter, go in for a couple months and do something mellow, or are you looking for something to do after that, which would be like another crazy thing like this?
You know, I never really know until I see it. You know, I can say, oh, it would be fun to be on a big, you know, budget movie and have a nice big trailer and, you know, and first class this and that. But it's usually the script first. Like, I never really read a script going, what's the budget or how much money do they have? Like, I'll read it if it's, because, you know, look at a film like An Education, you know, all these smaller films, you know, you never know what is going to be the one that reaches through, you know.
Right.
So, no, if it strikes me, and always the theme is try not to repeat. You know, after Gone Baby Gone, there was a lot of, you know, single mother, you know, bad mother roles. It's like, I want to try that again. It's like, you know, maybe in a few years, a different version of it or something. But, you know, so it's always try not to do the job I just did.
You know. Is there a role you die in?
I don't know. I always just say, like, I want her to have an arc, you know, or I told a friend of mine, a playwright, I was like, write a play, and then at the very end, just change that man's part. Just make it a woman's name, you know, shift it up so it's not just, you know, the girlfriend or the wife or the murder victim.
Are you at the point where we can offer that input to a director or a filmmaker and get change in May? Are you at the point now where we can get something you like and say, make it more, like even more by...
I don't know if it's because that's something I now have in my bag of tricks or I'm able to do, but I feel like I've been lucky to work with directors like, that's what we're doing with Tom's script now, and he offered that straight up. He's like, I rewrite when I have, you know, I have the actors in mind, so know that I'm not precious about my script. So anything, however small, anything big that strikes you, you know, and his script already has changed, you know, the character. Some things minor, some things major, and we're still working on that until the cameras start rolling, you know. And so it just happened to luck out that I have found these incredibly collaborative directors, which is really nice.
What do you understand to be the departure points of fiction from truth in Green Zone from your character's perspective? I know it's probably like a composite of a number of journalists during that time and stuff.
Yeah, so what is truth in Laurie Dane's world of what...
Of what transpires in the movie, at least from your...
Like, was she duped?
Contribution to it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the particulars involved, I don't know how much of that stuff's been confirmed or widely regarded as true, or how much of that was for the sake of storytelling, sort of.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I mean... I imagine you're speaking mostly with Judith Miller and her involvement and the articles that, you know, she wrote for the New York Times. But again, it's based on a fictitional character and could have been a man and could have been any outlet. But I think, again, it's hard to tell, like, what, you know, what is fact and fiction? Again, like, how much are we going to keep reading and what are our own, you know, I certainly brought my own opinions to it, what I believed to be true. But again, I had to approach it from the actor, the character's point of view, like where's her ego involved, or if it is true. Like, I don't believe anyone is purely evil, like I'm gonna write this down to start a war, you know. But something made someone write something, and why did that happen? And that, to me, is what's most interesting. What would drive someone? And is it just their career? As Matt's character says, like, because you want another Pulitzer Prize, you can't keep doing this. You know, these things matter. You know, you have to check. You have, you know. So that's really the way I approached it. I didn't much go for what was fact and fiction out there, as opposed to the world and our script, what we were saying. You know, and going from there.
Seems like from early message board posts and impressions and stuff, one half of the country might decidedly think it's agitprop or that it's some kind of liberal Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
Or how would you address something like that?
Well, certainly with my character, I think she represents both sides, because, you know, she starts out as someone who, you know, is fed information. And then at the end, that she represents, you know, the other side of reporters trying to get the truth out, you know. So I don't know. How would I address that to them? I think any movie that shows soldiers with helmets on, people naturally think there must be a side, you know. You play war, you take a side, you know. So, but I don't think this film takes side so much. Even the character of Freddie, you know, he goes up against Matt Damon and he says, it's not for you to decide what happens in my country. You know, so we even see it from that perspective. We're, you know, as Americans, we keep going, oh, it's only a Republican side and a Democratic side. But, you know, we over and over keep forgetting about the other country side. So I like that the film brings that point up.
That's all we have time for.
All right, thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.